Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you. If you are considering a career in the entertainment industry, and our guests will provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to professionally pursue a career in entertainment. And that means you're definitely going to have someone on the show sooner or later from the show business industry that you want to pursue. So you have to listen every single week. You have to become obsessed and addicted to this show. You might miss something. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. Click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click the link. And this takes you directly to our archive page, and that is where you can view a list of the past guests. Now, all of the radio shows on LA Talk Radio are available for download on iTunes under the podcast section and on Stitcher.com. So just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box and go to the LA Talk Radio homepage to download the free apps for your Android. What the hell is that word? Android or iPhone. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, we have some phenomenal guests coming on. The surprises are endless. It's just a plethora of excitement on this damn show. So you will have to go to our website, the official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com, and check out all the guests. We are about to book for 2015. You know, our shows are always booked 6 months to a year in advance, and we have a waiting list a mile long, so we're about to book for 2015. So if you work professionally in the entertainment industry and want to come on the show to share your sage advice or just promote a damn project, just go to the website and fill out the brief contact form, and you'll be able to come on the show if you are approved. Of course, you'll be approved. Yeah. Okay, so, oh my God, now I have gotten so many emails because of these two little hotties that are in the station today. I've gotten 217 emails, by the way, Twitters and tweets and all that damn stuff of the modern technology. People are losing their damn minds because of Vic. Oh, here we go. Now, if I mispronounce his name, I'm going to get it big time. All right, here we go. He told me it is Mignana. What? I did it. Did I do it? Yeah, I did it.
Damnation, girl.
And the...
You hit that one out of the damn park.
I have got an audience full of fans here tonight, so it's just going to be crazy up in here. Now, Michelle Specht is
well
here.
Done.
What? She... Oh, my God. You think this girl is gorgeous looking at her on the internet? Hell no. My areolas were titillated. And I'm like, totally had her... They were just gone. Like, damn. And I'm all man. I'm all beefcake. And I was like, damn, this girl's hot.
Priscilla.
Yeah.
What are areolas? Isn't that a spacecraft that orbited the Earth back in the late 70s?
You're too young to know that. Oh. Oh, God. So without further ado, as you know, Vic and Michelle are on the hugely popular, like, wildly crazy people lose their minds. They're, like, greasing themselves up at the thought of seeing Vic, Mignana, and Michelle. They're like, oh, my God, what can I do to make these people want me, want you? All right. So Star Trek continues. And let me tell you, for those of you...
Shh.
Somebody just came in. For those of you who are not familiar with the show, Star Trek Continues. What happens? Here's what it's about. So what happens when you throw a ragtag team of entertainment professionals who also happen to be huge Star Trek fans together? What's going to happen? Besides orgies, obviously, lots of things are going to happen. One of the most, you know, entertainment, you know, we all do orgies, entertainment. No, it's just kidding. All right. We stopped that in the 70s.
Honey,
right?
We have got to get on this show. Do you have any openings for employment here?
So this is one of the most acclaimed fan-produced Star Trek web series ever created. Vic Mignogna and Michelle Specht and the entire team are proud to be part of Star Trek history, with the fan production aimed at completing the final 2 years of the original 5-year mission. And we love the original series. They love the original series. And because of that, they're associated with Farragut Films, I believe, and Dracogen Investments and Vic Dracogen. What the hell kind of word is this? Dracogen?
Dracogen.
Oh, I love that. Dracogen.
It's kind of like Ariel.
That sounds like... I love that. And Vic from Far From Home plans to continue to raise the bar in the quality of the stories. And they've done that if you've seen them, obviously. And the overall production of this new fan-based series. And it's going to feature, it already has featured, some of the original actors on Star Trek. Right? Well, it says it will feature. This is coming from your damn website. I'm reading this and trying to act like I know what I'm talking about. It says it will feature some of the original actors on Star Trek, as well as various celebrity guest stars.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, we know the guest stars. Okay, so we'll get Shatner on there. Just don't worry. We're going to plot. We'll get him on there.
We'll tell him we have orgies.
We'll tell him. He'll come.
He won't be able to say no.
He'll be like, I'll be there.
He'll be there.
But, you know what? We have had some... Yeah. Hi, everybody, by the way.
Yeah.
And hi,
this
Priscilla.
This is Vic. Vic, welcome to the show.
It is a pleasure. It's
Thank
a pleasure
you for
to be
being here.
Here. We have had some people from the original series, from
yes.
different Star Trek series. Our very first episode, our guest star was a man named Michael Forrest,
right.
who did a million things back in the day as an actor, and one of them was... He played the Greek god Apollo
yes.
in the original Star Trek episode.
Right, you remember that.
I remember that.
He reprised his role as Apollo. And since then, the voice of our computer is Marina Surtees from Star Trek Next Generation. Sure. And Michael Dorn did a little voice work for us. Right. And we've had a lot of people from other different sci-fi and pop TV shows
Aaron Gray,
Lou Ferrigno, Jamie Bamber from Battlestar Galactica,
okay.
Daniel Logan, who was little baby Boba Fett.
Oh, the baby.
Yeah, little boy.
I'm consistently impressed with just the caliber of people who want to be involved in
you know
Star
what
Trek
I found? Shows. I found that no matter how big they've become in their field, as soon as you start talking about Star Trek, they become 12 years old again. And they're like, oh, I loved that show when I was a little kid. And it brings something up in them that reminds them of that wonder and that magic when they were a little kid, and they just want to be a part of it. It's not about money. It's not about whether it can boost their fame. They just want to be a part of it.
They want to be,
as we do. You know,
they want to be part of something that is part of the television landscape. It's huge internationally.
Yeah.
And there's a theme park opening it's already opened in, was it?
What? No, in Dubai.
Dubai, yes.
There's
what?
A Star Trek
what?
Theme park. I know. Let's go now.
Let's hang up and let's just go. Let's,
oh, yeah.
All right. We'll see you later, guys.
By the way, the British voice, the sultry British voice, that's my co-host, Ben Patton. We forgot to introduce
you. You always
Ben.
Do such a good job of introducing me.
We brought him because he is the foremost Star Trek, Star Wars. Or sci-fi expert. We brought him on the last time you heard him. He was on with Anthony Dyson, the creator of Star Wars, when we had him on.
Ooh.
And Ben,
he was the creator of R2-D2.
The creator
right,
of R2-D2.
Right, right.
Yeah, so I gotta be careful around Ben, because Ben will crack my ass real quick. He knows everything there is to know about Star Trek, I guess.
Well, let's bring it.
We're quizzing.
Bring
it.
I know.
You're in good company here.
Yeah. So we're gonna alternate with questions. We had so many people write in questions, so I'm gonna try to get to all of them, but thank you so much for writing in. But let's start. First of all, Vic, did you know that I had two cats? I got to throw this in. You'll ask the sophisticated questions. I'm going to go more with it. Do you know I had two cats? I named them Kirok and Miramani. So I'm going to just throw it in.
Wait a minute. I'm in love with you.
I
am so in love with
you
right now.
And those bastards ran away.
Okay, wait a minute.
No.
Wait a minute. Here we go with now a great trivia question for you.
Oh, shit.
What episode was Miramani from?
Well, it was the one where he stood on the damn rock.
I am Kirok! Yes, but what was the name of the episode?
Albert, what was the name of the episode?
Now we're going to go over to Ben.
I'm terrible with episode titles.
I am all about episode titles.
Paradise Syndrome.
Paradise, oh my god. Okay.
Albert's totally
okay, wait a minute. He just totally Google searched that.
Oh, that was what, but that actually wasn't my favorite episode. My favorite one was, oh, no, you got to name this one.
Oh, not a problem in the world.
Right,
I'll name it before
all
you
right.
finish your sentence.
All right. Okay.
Go ahead.
The man must continue.
Metamorphosis.
Damn.
Boom. You ready for this? I'll go you one
favorite.
Better. I'll go you one better.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. That's the theme from the musical theme from that episode. Oh my gosh.
Oh, not that. Oh,
yeah. With Zephram Cochran.
Oh, yeah.
And what a great episode. And that was one of the most beautiful scores
I love that
of the series.
One. That was my favorite.
The man
favorite.
Must continue.
You hear these various voices and you probably think there's other people in the room. No, that is Vic. Vic is a voiceover phenomenon. I had no idea.
I'm just a lowly voice actor. I'm not an impersonator.
You actually won an award, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, let me just whip it on up here. Now, you've been doing acting from the age of 8 all the way through college. You majored in film and minor in theater. And you are perhaps best known, other than Captain Kirk, you do the voice of the prolific actor for over 200 animated series and video games, including Full Metal Alchemist, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon, and many more. But you won an award for something, and I swear to God, I can't remember.
Well, you are very kind.
Anime.
Several years ago, some organizations put together the first annual American Anime Awards.
Okay.
And they allowed the fans to vote basically to narrow down a pool of nominees for the different areas, just like in the Academy Awards, best long series, best supporting actors, whatever. And they narrowed it down, and then they had the finals in New York City several years ago. And I was fortunate enough to have been nominated as best actor for a Full Metal Alchemist, but also by another company for Macross. Any of you old school or anime fans out there remember a show named Macross, which was turned into an American show called Robotech.
Now I know that.
Right.
Okay.
Robotech is Macross.
Oh.
In Japan it was Macross. But when it came to the States, they kind of rewrote it and gave the kids, like, I played Hikaru Ichijo, who was the main character. That would be the Rick Hunter character from Macross. But I was fortunate enough to win that year as best actor. And
so you can do accents as well. Did you do was that a Japanese?
Oh, no.
Is that No,
actually, a lot of anime, well, most of anime, that's what it is. Anime originates in Japan. It's created and produced there and dubbed there. And then American companies will buy the license to dub it into English.
Okay.
And so they'll buy a show like Full Metal or Dragon Ball Z or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! And then they'll cast with American actors and re-record the entire thing with English-speaking actors. And you know what? They do the same thing in Spanish, Italian.
French. Anime is huge in France.
Oh, my God, yes. And in Italy, I mean, they've literally got an Italian version of Dragon Ball Z. And the Japanese company that owns the property will sell it to an Italian dubbing company, give them the license to dub it into Italian and the French into French and so on and so forth.
And that's a really difficult... I have a few friends also who've done voiceover and dubbing for various anime shows, and that's a really tough job to do because you've got to match kind of the lip movement.
And I appreciate you saying that, Ben. Yeah. And I'll tell you, it's funny because when you talk to like voice actors who do like big mainstream stuff, which we call prelay. Prelay is when you record the voices first. So you have a massive amount of flexibility in your performance because you're not having to match a particular animation or a timing or a mouth movement. And people that make tons and tons of money doing prelay, major mainstream stuff, will tell you that anime is the hardest voiceover acting there is, because not only do you have to deliver a believable performance, but you have to do it within a very strict confine and rhythm and space and movement of the mouth, and it's not easy at all.
There's a lot of stuff to have to focus on all at the same time. You're getting, like you said, you're getting your performance right and matching it to the...
It's an equal technical kind of set of skills as well as creative.
Right.
Which makes it so hard.
Some
it
people can so match the mouth flaps just right, but they don't sound like they're really, you know, it's not. And other people are great actors, but they can't seem to match the rhythm of the movement, the mouth movement. So it's an interesting combination of skills, like Michelle said, technical and artistic. And it doesn't pay very well. I'm just going to say that. Anime is like down at the bottom rung when it comes to kind of voice acting. And yet most people that have done both will tell you that it's one of the more difficult things to do.
Right.
Which that's obscene that it's not paying as much as it should do. That's
well,
that's
you know what? I'm not a good person to ask about that. And you
You're
know why?
A bit biased.
But you know, no, I'm not a good person to ask. And you know why?
Why is that?
Because I love what I do.
Oh,
I love it so much.
With voice acting,
I know,
you can go in, flip flops.
Right?
You can have
exactly. I
short,
love.
You go and do it 45 minutes. You're out.
I hope nobody that hires me is listening right now because I would do it for nothing. No. I love what I do.
I don't think anyone listens to this show. I think you're probably serious.
Right. Now, a lot of Star Trek fans dismiss the entire third episode, but there are quite a few gems.
Third season.
But there are quite a few gems, and in fact,
oh, yes, there
I
are.
Understand
my
your favorite
episode
is Methuselah.
Requiem for Methuselah,
yes.
My favorite episode. Mr. Flint, Raina, oh my gosh, I love that episode so much.
Why are these fans dismissing the third season?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because by the time Star Trek got to the third season, NBC was kind of looking for a way to get rid of the show. It was costing a lot of money. They were constantly fighting with Roddenberry over the kind of stories he wanted to tell, but they didn't, you know, they weren't so on board with. And so they kept cutting budgets and making it more difficult. And so by the third season, the stories weren't as strong. The production wasn't as good. Like, you look at the lighting alone.
The production took a serious hit in the
third season.
Oh,
my gosh. If you were to look at stills from the third season, you'd be like, oh, my gosh. It looks like they lit this with light bulbs, you know, guys holding up light bulbs. It doesn't have anywhere near the amazing painting that the first two seasons did, the lighting.
Is that the one they did the OK Corral?
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? And there's a perfect example.
Right?
They didn't have the budget. They originally were going to do that in a Western town on location, and they didn't have the budget. And so they came up with the idea of, well, you know, it's kind of in their minds kind of a thing. So we'll just have these stand-up just the facades. Yeah, and that is exactly right, Priscilla. They figured out a way to make it work on a limited budget. But the third season, they were really struggling. And
the third season, it sounds like they had a lot of the same kind of production constraints that classic Doctor Who had had from the beginning. Of course, I'm going to bring Doctor Who in. I'm British.
We're glad you did. We love Doctor Who.
We love it.
But yeah, Doctor Who has always been like imagination in a time of no money, as opposed to money in a time of no imagination, which is what a lot of movies are these days. And Star Trek, even though they didn't have the money and the investment that they could have in the production for the third season, they still did a lot of really creative stuff.
Amazing things.
Oh yeah,
amazing. And you know, they were the most expensive show on television back in the day. And in fact, there's a set of books out by Mark Cushman, a good friend of mine, called These Are the Voyages, and he goes in depth with the production and the difficulties and the challenges of making the show in the first place. He's got memos and stuff between NBC and Roddenberry and all kinds of really great in-depth stuff. And he even says in the book that Star Trek basically bankrupted Desilu. Desilu was the studio that Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball owned. And Lucy was the one that championed Star Trek. Everybody else didn't want to make it, and she wanted to. And so she put her studio on the line. And the series was so expensive to make that most people feel like Star Trek pretty much bankrupted Desilu.
Wow.
Now, Vic, I have heard that your sets are the most accurate of several replicas out there. And I've seen the shows, and it certainly does look that way. So how do you manage to recreate?
Oh, not easy.
Come on now. Such precision, Vic. How?
Well, we've got a lot of crazy, obsessed people. I'm one of them. Who have for our whole lives since we were little kids would watch these shows and examine, you know, what's on the wall, what's sitting on the shelf back there in Kirk's quarters. What is that fabric on the sickbay beds? What is that? And just really, you know, obsessive about details and building props and set replicas and stuff and sculptures and paintings. We've got a lot of people in our production crew that are very detail oriented. Mm-hmm. William Smith, Ralph Miller, Dave. Mike Bednar, David Arland, a whole bunch of people, Royal Weaver, Greg Green, and these guys pay extra close attention. But I have to say something. There are other fan productions that have rebuilt sets or pieces of the sets. But the difference is, number one, you have to know how to light a set. Yeah. Once you build the set, it looks completely different under existing ceiling lights than it does when you actually shoot on it. And our DP, Matt Busey, is a god who walks among men.
It's true.
He is a brilliant, brilliant. I hope he's listening because we love him so much. He's a dear friend and he's a genius. And by the way, when we decided we were going to rebuild the sets, we went online and there were floor plans from the original soundstage. And Matt, who happens to also be an architect, took those plans and did all of the mathematical extrapolations and made us drawing architectural plans to build our soundstage.
That's amazing.
So what, if and when you guys ever come down to the studio, when you walk through it, it's within inches of the original soundstage sets, and it's all interconnected exactly the way the original series was. It's breathtaking.
Do you shoot here?
No, our studio is in Kingsland, Georgia, basically Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
We have a 10,000 square foot facility down there where we've rebuilt all of this. And the other thing I want to say, which I have to put in here when we talk about sets, a lot of people can build sets.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know production and you know TV shows, the sets are just a backdrop.
Mm.
At the end of the day, the audience, the image comes on and the audience goes, wow, look at the sets. They look so real. They look so accurate. And 30 seconds later, they're over it. Now they want you to tell them a story. Now they want to see the actors bring the drama.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it doesn't matter that the sets look so accurate.
Yeah.
There needs to be more than just rebuilding, you know, and recreating sets. So that was the first step. But then the second step is get good actors, tell good stories, and, you know, and take every element of production as far as you possibly can. Don't just make nice sets, but every aspect of production.
Speaking of actors, I would imagine you don't have a problem casting. You don't do like actors access things like that. How do you cast like for regular casting? How do you cast for the guys who get killed in the red shirts?
If you ever need a red shirt, by the way.
You know, you would be a perfect red shirt, Ben.
Yes. How do you cast for the red shirt boys?
Here's the next episode. Captain Kirk is going to say, Lieutenant Ben to the transporter room. You're beaming down with me.
And
yes, sir. Oh, crap.
I was talking to my friend Joe about this the other day. We just imagine there's this like break room where all of the red shirts are, and they're just like chain smoking,
and they're just waiting.
Just
and
waiting.
There's a little window, and go boom. Their name comes up, and like, sorry,
oh, no.
Sorry, Ensign Clemens.
There goes the free food. No more craft service. I'm gone.
In answer to your question, I never wanted to make this with just hired guns.
Yeah,
this city is full of people that just, you know, you could hire them to do a job. That's not what I wanted to do.
Right.
I wanted to make Star Trek Continues with friends, with people that I liked, people that I knew. So when it came time to cast Spock, I thought, who do I know? And I thought, well, my buddy Todd Haberkorn is a great actor. He's a voice actor. He's a good friend. And he really wanted to play the role. And so I asked Todd to play the role. I put out a casting call for Spock. Same thing with McCoy.
Yeah.
Chuck Huber is a very dear friend of mine, awesome veteran voice actor, and an amazing actor on stage in Dallas.
Didn't you have a different original actor?
Yes, we did. Chuck Huber was supposed to be Dr. McCoy.
Okay.
And then he had an emergency come up at the last minute, so we had to fill that space. And a wonderful dear friend who is still a part of the STC family, Larry Nemechek.
Yes.
Is he loves McCoy the way I love Kirk. And so that's all I needed to hear.
Larry's a sweetheart. He's the nicest guy.
The nicest.
And so he graciously stepped in literally a month before the first episode, and he did the first and the second, and then Chuck was able to come back in and pick back up with McCoy. So Larry is still a very active part of our team.
But then
Sulu. I knew Grant Imahara from Mythbusters. We were friends. We did Dragon Con together. We'd done some events, and I saw him at a get together, and I said, Grant, look at this thing we're building. And I showed him some of the sets, and he's like, oh.
If there's anyone who's going to geek out over that.
He geeked out. That's it. And so I said, hey, I haven't cast Sulu yet. And he's like, oh, man, I would love it.
But
so
wait a minute. We haven't talked about everybody, hopefully, if you watch the show, you know that Chris Doohan is on there. Who is Scotty's son.
Yes.
So my question is, did you approach him? How did he feel about playing his dad's role?
I had met him through Facebook. We had some mutual friends, but I'd never really spoken to him much. And when I decided to do this, I thought, well, I could try to find an actor friend, but, you know, how amazing would it be for this man to play his father's role and step into that character? And I contacted him on Facebook, and we met for lunch, and he said I'd be glad to do it. And I have to tell you something funny about Chris. When we finished the first episode, and I'd finished editing it, he kept calling me and texting me saying, I suck, don't I? I sucked, didn't I, Vic? And I'm like, no, dude, you were great. And when we finally aired the episode, screened the episode, he literally called me and said, if you want to recast Scotty, I'll understand. And I was like, are you kidding me, dude?
Chris.
It's in your blood, baby.
Oh, yeah.
You were made to play this role. And you know what? His parents, like his mom and his family, his brothers and sisters, they are elated that he's getting to play his
That's
dad's
fantastic.
Role. It's so neat.
Now, from an independent series production, you guys have a really short turnaround time from production to release. So how do you manage to recreate this? Because there are other, and we won't mention them, but there are other people doing Star Trek stuff. And I know this one friend of mine, Jonathan Carter Shaw, he was in an episode on this other show, which we won't say. It's been 3 years, hasn't it? 3 years, and they haven't released the show yet. And they were supposed to be airing it in February. Now they got a bunch of pissed off people because they ran a fundraising campaign. And it's the worst thing to make promises like that, and all of them are doing it. How are you able to do what you say? Because you have a kick-ass fundraising campaign.
Well, thank you.
Because, yeah, I mean, is it Kickstarter?
Kickstarter.
Kirkstarter, I like that. See, we need to patent that. Kirkstarter. But you have an amazing campaign. But what I noticed, because Albert brought you to me,
thank you,
Albert.
Thank you.
And he donated. And what
Thank
we
you.
Noticed was that, unlike other people, you give them the money and God knows you're lucky if you hear from them again. You have weekly updates. I mean, you send out stuff. I mean, you follow through on everything.
We've done everything.
Amazing.
Well, we've done everything we said we were going to do. And let me answer your question. I would really like to.
Right.
The difference between, you know, other productions, as you mentioned, is that, as best I can tell, the difference is that we have people who know what they're doing in each different area. So, for instance, you know, when we write a story, we break it down properly. We know how to shoot it properly. So if you shoot it properly, it will edit easily. And if it edits easily, you turn it around quickly. You don't have to reshoot this and redo that and pick up that and redo that. And, oh, that we didn't get that. And we shot about 80% of the episode. No, all of our episodes. We shoot the whole thing in 9 days, sometimes less. And Lolani was
seven and a half,
8 days. And no pickups. Nothing has to be redone.
Because no 18-hour days.
No, no, you know,
like
no,
that,
no,
crazy.
No weeks and weeks of ADR because you have to replace all the audio. We've got people who are really good at what they do, and that's the key. I mean, I've worked on some other productions, and
you were actually on something.
I've worked on some other things,
yeah.
And the one thing that I've noticed was that while they're good people and they mean well and they're fans, which is great. There's a lot of organizational problems, and they're not professionals in the industry. So they don't really know they don't really have a plan how they're going to shoot and how they're going to keep it moving and have a vision professionally.
Yeah.
And how's this going to cut together? Nobody,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to know all that stuff. And for better or worse, I've been doing it since I was 12 years old. So Star Trek Continues for me is a perfect marriage of my childhood dream with skills that I've been developing since I was a little boy. I'm not just a fan who wants to play Captain Kirk. I've been acting since I was a little kid, and I've been in production and majored in it and done tons of directing, shooting, editing, sound design, lighting, costuming, props, all of it. So this was just my outpouring of all of the skills that I've been doing since I was little and my childhood love of Star Trek.
That's my next question. I can't believe you asked. Do you remember the of course you do. What was the first episode you saw? And my question is, what was it that made you fall in love with the character overall or the story? So trivia quiz.
No, I know. No, I know.
First episode. And what made you go, I want to do that show?
That's a flawless impersonation.
I think it was. I've been practicing all week,
When did you bring Bill Shatner? When did Shatner come in the room?
I think if you need an understudy for Kirk.
Can I real quick, you asked another question that I didn't get to answer about the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
When we got ready to do this, the first episode, a lot of people said, hey, launch Kickstarter. Ask people for money. And I thought to myself, I don't have a good feeling about asking people to give me money for something I haven't done. Mm-hmm. They don't even know if I'm capable of doing this. And as you said, there are plenty of productions and plenty of ideas, and we have this dream of making this or building that or doing this. Give us money. And lots of people take money for things that never ever happen.
Yes.
Or when they do happen, they happen, they're not so great.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like it was kind of morally right to take money for something that nobody knew we could do. So I thought, you know what, Vic? If there ever there was a time to put your money where your mouth is, it's now. And my beautiful fiance, Michelle, here will tell you
that was one of my questions, because I've been seeing it all over the internet.
So,
hugging and kissing and squeezing. I was going to save that for the last. I was like, because fans want to know, are you two an item? And now you've just done a spoiler.
Dang.
Damn it.
Let's back it up.
Okay, go ahead.
But so I said, you know what? I'm going to put my own money into this. Yeah. I'm going to fund the first episode myself. Now, the first episode was not just the episode. It was building the sets. Mm-hmm. That's a one-time expenditure. Once you build them, they're there. But that was a lot. So I put tens of thousands of my own money into the first episode. I, myself and Steven Dengler, we funded the first episode. Mm. And I felt like once we do that, if it turns out good and people like what they're seeing, then we'll ask them if they will help us make more. So that's what we did. The first episode was basically a proof of concept. Once we did the first episode, then we launched a Kickstarter, and we said, if you'll give us this much, we'll make three more episodes. And that's exactly what we've done, like clockwork. We made Lolani, we made Fairest of Them All, and in this fall, this will be shooting episode 4, and we will have fulfilled exactly what we said we would do efficiently, just like we promised.
So in many ways, that first episode served as a kind of a pilot.
Yeah. Very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in answer to your question, now your next question, mm-hmm. I remember the first episode I saw was one third season, actually, called The Tholian Web.
And
it was one where Kirk got caught in this inner space where they couldn't quite lock onto him to beam him back to the ship, and they thought he had died, and then he started appearing to the crew. But I said this in a documentary, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but it's the truth.
We don't know it.
The truth is the truth. And the truth here is that I discovered Star Trek exactly at the moment in my life when my parents divorced. Mm. I was 9 years old, and my parents divorced, and my dad was gone. And my dad was never, since that day, has never been a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't surprise me when I look back and reflect on it that I turned this show on one day, and here's this strong, admirable, brave, mm-hmm. handsome leader who has these friends that he protects, and they love him, and they do these adventures together, and they support each other. And Captain Kirk became a father figure to me.
Right.
A role model. And I would come home every day religiously, and I would put a tape recorder by the speaker of the television, and I would record the episode on a cassette. I know you guys don't know what that is anymore.
It's a cassette.
Yeah, that doesn't even hardly exist anymore.
I just about remember. I used to do the same thing with old Doctor Who, actually.
Yeah, and I would record the episode, but then at night, as I would go to bed, I would put the tape recorder under my pillow and listen to the episodes as I would go to sleep. I still have a trumpet case at my mom's house with 79 cassettes in it.
Oh, wow.
With my little scribbling of the name of the episode on them. It just resonated with me.
Yeah.
And it inspired me to want to try to do things creatively that I'd never tried before. So a lot of the things that I do now professionally, I actually do because I was inspired to try them by watching Star Trek. Make phaser props? I'd never tried to make anything before, but Star Trek inspired me to try to do that. I asked my mom to teach me to use a sewing machine so I could make my own costumes. Oh. And I would go out in the neighborhood and round the kids up in the neighborhood and make little Star Trek episodes where I was Captain Kirk and you're Mr. Spock and you're going to be Dr. McCoy. All of the things, ironically, that I do now professionally.
You just browbeated those little bitches into playing with you, didn't you?
There are traumatized children.
Ew, they're still going, that damn guy.
He glued my ears into a point.
God damn it. Now, Michelle, we know that, of course, Vic was like a huge fan. Were you a Trekkie prior to your role on Star Trek Continues?
Huge sci-fi geek, huge Star Trek fan, but I grew up on The Next Generation.
Yes.
That was the show that I grew up on. Did I fall in love with that.
Yeah. Yes.
And from there, it just went on with everything from Battlestar Galactica. I mean, it was just everything. Doctor Who, we're huge Whovians.
Huge!
We'll have to talk about it.
A David Tennant.
He is so hot.
You know what? I love Matt Smith, but I think Tennant was probably the best doctor.
Dave Tennant is sexy. Matt Smith is crazy.
I'm the youngest person in the room, but my doctor is Patrick Troughton.
I love Patrick Troughton.
And there's so much of Troughton's performance you can see in Matt Smith.
Oh, absolutely.
Vic is showing me a picture. He's got a picture with Matt Smith and Doctor Who.
You lucky
bugger. No, where's David Tennant? You gotta get one with David Tennant, Michelle.
You know what? David Tennant doesn't do conventions. If he did conventions, I absolutely would. And you know who else is lovely? Colin Baker.
Yeah.
I love him. Really, oh, my gosh. What an amazing man.
I saw him at Gallifrey One this year. He's just the nicest guy.
Yes. And we did Fan Expo in Toronto last year. And greatest guy.
So, sci-fi,
Star Trek geek, but I had not seen the original series.
Did you know him? Did he cast you? Is that how you found out about the role?
Oh, yes.
Excuse me, Michelle, were you on the casting couch?
Well, I have been on that casting couch for a few years. Thanks. Prior to the creation of Dr. Elise McKenna.
So you were perfect. But, you know, I love that he's introducing strong characters.
Well, and that is the point. And, you know, Star Trek is such the result of the cultural time it was made in. And we can't help, even though we're recreating this incredibly classic, iconic, well-established, and so beloved universe, we can't help but be a little bit influenced by the time and culture that we are a product of. Right. So introducing these strong female roles was something that we knew Gene wanted to do. Even in the very first pilot, or what was supposed to be the pilot, Sally Kellerman playing a character that was somewhat conducive to what Dr. Elise McKenna is. And you saw that idea just really expanded upon in TNG with, of course, Deanna Troi and Dr. Crusher. So I feel like Dr. McKenna's kind of between those two. She's kind of bridging the gap between those two. And I hope when people watch this that are true TOS fans, they can feel the amount of love and respect we have for this entire institution.
Oh, yeah.
And that any part that Dr. McKenna can bring is just a complimentary. We wanted very much so for her not to be just some added on, stick on something
you're
or other.
Definitely making that your own. I mean, Nichelle Nichols, Dr. McKenna.
Right. Well, and it's so lovely to have. And, you know, I've got to tell you, the most wonderful responses that I have gotten have been men who grew up watching Star Trek and having these wonderful icons who are now fathers to daughters. And them sharing with me in emails and in contact they have with me on the fan page saying, I can't even tell you how choked up it makes me to be able to share this thing that I love, that I grew up loving with my daughters, with someone that they can look up to now in your role. And
it's
that
important.
Just, of course, I think
like
so.
Now more than ever, you know, we
Very
need
much
more.
So.
And this is the thing, I was reading an article about this. But there's a show on BBC America at the moment called Orphan Black.
Oh my God, I love that is one of the most talented actresses. I had never heard of her. Tatiana Maslany.
No.
I didn't know. I'm like, who the hell is she?
Who's this little thing? She weighs about 90 pounds.
Five
She's going to be
characters
five people.
At
I don't know about
time.
That. By the third episode, I was like, I'm hooked.
I was absolutely hooked.
Yeah.
But what Orphan Black is doing with these various strong female characters, that's what Buffy the Vampire Slayer was doing in the late 90s and early noughties. And we don't get that anymore, you know? There aren't enough strong, interesting female characters. It's usually on, especially on television. And as an example, like in the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies as well, the female characters tend to be there to push or motivate the male characters in particular directions. And I think it's very important, and I think it's great that you guys are doing this, to have female characters who stand on their own two feet as their own characters.
Yeah, and Kirk's not like trying to grab a cup of feel every five seconds. No offense, Vic, because I know you do it off camera, but I like how you're not... You know, you're not... what is that word called when you did it to women back in
misogynist?
Yes.
It's still misogyny if you do it now, Priscilla.
Yeah, well... Yeah, but her character is just... her. Too. Oh, my God, we're getting calls. Oh, gosh.
Goodness.
Okay, we'll take one call because we got 10 minutes and I got so many.
Gosh, no!
I know! Look at these questions! I haven't even gotten
all right,
to
everybody
all my
join us down at the Pete's Coffee on the corner.
We're
going to
take one question, and I know there's a million, but you are on the air with Vic Mignogna and Michelle Speck. Go! What is your question?
Oh, my God. Okay, I just wanted to ask Vic one thing.
Okay.
If you have any advice for anyone who wants to start with voice acting at not too young of age, a rising senior, what would you say is the best thing to start with?
What is your name?
Yeah, what is your name and where
Emily?
Are you calling from?
Emily?
Emily.
Hi, Emily. Thanks for calling so much. Where do you live?
Where do you live? I live in Richmond.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm glad you asked, because I know there are a lot of people out there with that question. Very simply, most voice actors have actually the same answers. There are two things if you want to get into voice acting. Number one, acting. Get into acting. You can just drop the word voice and just get into acting. All the voice actors that I know have a huge amount of experience and background as actors first. Get into school plays, church plays, community theater. Take acting classes, voice and diction classes. Develop your skills as an actor first. The operative word in voice acting is acting. And then the second thing is you have to be where that kind of work is done. And that's kind of the harder one. You know, there are only a handful of places where voice acting work is done. There's Dallas and Houston and, of course, L.A. and New York and Vancouver, Canada, which is obviously not that easy to get to. But... just like I tell people, you know, if I wanted to be a country western singer, I'd move to Nashville because that's where that kind of work is done predominantly. So if you're interested in voice acting, you need to develop skills as an actor and then find yourself or put yourself in a place where that kind of work is prevalent and you have the most opportunity. How's that sound, Emmy?
And would music prowess help at all?
You know what? I've found that musical prowess really is a big plus. Most voice actors I know also have a lot of skill and talent as singers, songwriters. They play an instrument or something because there is a rhythm to voice acting. I can't quite define it, but if you have a sense of tempo and rhythm, it tends to help you lock into the rhythm and the tempo of the characters that are speaking and the mouth movement. So do you play an instrument or?
I sing.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, then you are already ahead of the game, my dear. And singing helps you become more familiar with your voice, too.
Yes.
It helps you to become more familiar with how you can make your voice change and what you can do with it.
And the fluctuations. But thank you so much, Emily, for calling.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you so much. Okay, thank you, Emily. We are back. I have Michelle.
Yes.
What has Vic done any pillow talk where you're going to have any upcoming episodes that are going to just blow us away? Any in the new...
Where we're going, we don't need pillows.
What's the next...
That does rather imply also, Priscilla, that Michelle hasn't blown us away yet.
What?
I'm mixing my sci-fi there. That was a little Back to the Future, actually.
Are you talking about
the new episode that's coming up?
What's in reference to my character or just to the whole thing?
Is there something coming up? Did he write anything for you? Give us a little scoop. First of all, what's the episode title for the next?
I can't tell you.
The episode is entitled Captain McKenna.
Captain McKenna.
But it doesn't give away any spoilers.
He's like, I have this idea where Captain Kirk gets killed and I take over the ship.
To go where no man has gone before. Captain McKenna. What? Oh, no, we're going porn now.
Set phasers to stunning.
That's right. So anything you can tell us?
I will say this next episode is a really great one for McKenna. I will say that. For both Kirk and McKenna. It's a really, really good one.
Oh, are we going to have like a...
No. Professional.
Too many people expect that. We're not
Priscilla
doing
that. Priscilla has a one-track mind.
I do. That's
on
all
it.
Porn all
are
the time.
Are we going to see when areolas?
When we call cut? Yes, but not before.
Okay. Now, right. Vic, are you going to be continually adding new characters to the show?
Well, you know what? For us, Priscilla, it's story. It's all about the story. When somebody says, are you going to have the Romulans? if the story
is exactly. Crazy,
yeah.
Romulans.
Are you going to have the Romulans? Yeah. You know, I mean, if we come up with a good story that includes the Romulans,
the
then
Romulans
sure.
The Romulans look too much like the Klingons back
in
the day.
No.
No, you're
back
thinking
in the day.
Of the, you're thinking of the Vulcans. You're
oh,
talking,
Vulcan. Yeah. Vulcans.
Yeah, the Romulans, the Vulcans, okay. Well, they were related. But anyway, but we want to tell good stories. So if somebody comes up with a great story and it ends up there needs to be a guest star or a new character, then,
I'm
you know.
Wait a minute.
Sorry about this cough.
I think this is going to wow you. This is my wow moment.
Wow me.
I was thinking the other day. Vic needs to bring Captain Kirk on the show and then do an episode where he's the future Kirk. You're the young Kirk and he's the old Kirk.
You mean bring...
As a guest star. I'm talking William Shatner. Well, bring him on the show and then you're the young Kirk and he's the old Kirk. Do
you know
something.
What?
Can you we get
not,
William?
You may not believe it, but... Many people have suggested or
that same thing.
You know, thrown out the idea. Well, thrown out the idea. You should get William Shatner. Well, yeah, right. I wouldn't give to do that. I would love it. That would be a personal.
Have you ever talked to him about it?
Yeah, I've spoken. I haven't spoken with him about Star Trek Continues.
Oh, okay.
He and I actually do a lot of convention appearances together, and I love him to death. He's a wonderful man, and we've shared a lot of really great. Conversation together, but I've been very careful not to paint myself as some kind of rabid fan.
Yeah.
So we've actually kind of become
true.
Friends.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Right.
That's right. You know,
but if there's a way, if there's ever a way that it's possible, we would be honored beyond words.
So William, if you're listening, we're open to giving you a cameo role.
I do actually have a question regarding Kirk, because obviously you play Kirk on Star Trek Continues, that's a role a lot of people who are Star Trek fans have a lot of expectations of any actor playing that role.
Right.
You do what is, in my opinion, a very good job with the character.
Thank you.
So what I was wondering is how much of that is impersonation versus interpretation? How much of that is...
Michelle wants to answer that!
I see a red-haired girl with her hand up.
Go ahead, Michelle!
Okay, I just have to say that when you see him being up there being Kirk, no, that's just him being Vic. You don't understand. Captain
Kirk. Can we shut her mic off? Can we turn this mic off?
This is a good thing. Captain Kirk influenced him so heavily, just in who he was. It influenced everything about him, and the way he carries himself, and the way he holds himself physically, and the way he delivers lines, and the way he—it's very natural. That is him.
Do you remember what I said?
As himself.
What did I say about when I was a little boy and I was inspired? I was inspired to try things that I'd never tried, like acting.
Yes.
You know what? My college director in my theater department told me once. We did Camelot. Remember the musical? Camelot, and I played King Arthur, and I loved that show. And he came to me one day and he said, "You know, this is a very interesting take you have on King Arthur. It's kind of like Richard Harris meets Captain Kirk." And of course, I said, "Well, that's not really what I was going for, but I guess that's okay because I love Richard Harris and I love William Shatner."
Yes, so. Michelle, real quick, because we only have 2 minutes, believe it or not. I saw your demo reel, and for people who just think you do, Captain McKenna. Captain McKenna.
I love that.
You know what? Let's write her as a captain. Vic, make it happen. We'll have her.
All right.
An alternate. I saw your demo reel. I was blown away because I'm all about comedy. Your pacing, your comedic phrasing, your timing. You are a phenomenal comedic actress.
Thank you.
Really, really good. What's going on with that? Because I know that you were on VH1's...
Oh, yeah. I Hate My 30s.
My 30s. So you have a life outside of Vic. So let's talk about... Vic doesn't... trolley you all the time. What's going on with your career? What's coming up?
Well, we do, honestly, the fun stuff that we're doing now with Star Trek Continues and that I'm able to do with other fan productions, other sci-fi fan productions that I have been involved with and are currently involved with, are the most fun things that I'm doing. So even though I do other things that pay the bills,
yeah,
things like other voiceover gigs or commercials or TV spots, I got, you know, it. This is the stuff that I love the most. Yeah. My background's in comedy. I mean, when I came to LA, I spent the first 10 years doing live sketch with a group called Ass. Another showcase show. Yeah. And that was, we did live shows everywhere that had skits, original sketches, film bits, musical numbers.
Everything.
We did it regularly all around town. We did it at comedy festivals. We were developed into a TV show. They turned us into a sitcom for a year. It was called I Hate My 30s. And after that broke up, I mean, I can't get that out of my system. That's just who I am, default.
You need a show of your own, girl. She is phenomenal.
Oh, listen, let me just say, she's one of the most talented people. Yeah. And I don't just because I'm in love with her doesn't mean I think she's the most, you know, I can be realistic and say, well, honey, you know, you're not the greatest actress.
But, yeah, that's going to get you somewhere. What I'm saying is
I could love her and still know that she has a certain limit to her abilities and just be realistic. But she is one of the most talented actors I've ever seen, and I not only do I love her, but I think it's amazing what she does with Dr. McKenna. We had talked about whether or not we wanted her to play Yeoman Rand, and she and I talked about it, and we thought, well, you know what? Rather than having the blonde wig with the thatch, and rather being that, let's make up a new character. We talked about the ship's counselor. When did they start that? You know, they had it in Next Gen, but when did they start it? And she is amazing at that role.
Is.
And it's not just because I love her; she's amazingly talented.
MichelleSpeck.com. MichelleSpeck.com.
Come and see me.
Come and see her sometime. Real quick, we got to go, but next weekend you have the Geeky Awards for Best Web Series. Where is that? If somebody wants to come see you?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a great question. Just Google
it. Google it.
Geeky Awards. And by the way, you can go to StarTrekContinues.com.
Yes.
And right on the homepage is a link to the Geeky Awards. We're very excited about that.
And you're, September the 4th, you're at the Burbank Film Festival, Episode 3, Ferris in the Mall. I'm a screener for Burbank Film Festival. Very excited about it. Salt Lake Comic-Con. Say that three times.
Salt Lake Comic-Con.
Salt Lady. Oh,
Salt
Jesus.
Lake.
Yes, thank you.
Like Utah.
When's that coming out?
That's actually that same weekend. Okay. In fact, Louis Ferrigno is going to be over there, and I'm going to be flying over to join him for that show. I'm going to take 10 seconds. Oh, he was perfect, wasn't he?
Okay.
I'm going to take 10 seconds to say Lisa and Tim Hansel, Tim Vitito, Chris White, Casey Shafsky. We have an amazing James Kerwin. We have an amazing team of people, and I'll forget somebody. I know Ralph Miller, but we love and appreciate the people that work and help us with Star Trek Continues. We have a great family.
It's a family. Yes. It's a huge family.
So if you want to contribute, if you want to feel Vic in your heart and your soul, and you want to...
I want to feel where Vic is.
Then you want to go to StarTrekContinues.com. He has a... probably starting it soon, fundraiser.
Actually, you know what?
There's
a donate now button right in the website. On the website, if you look in the pages down at the bottom, there's a donate now button if you want to help out. And then probably in the fall, we'll be launching another Kickstarter because we will have done the three episodes.
So before we leave, we're going to leave, but I need you to do what no man's done before on this show. I need you to give me a line. Give me a line in the Captain Kirk voice, but you have to include my name.
Oh.
Come on the spot acting. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see what Vic can do.
I wish we had a music cue.
Okay. Hum something. Include my name. Priscilla.
Okay.
What?
You ready?
Okay.
In all my years as captain, I don't think I could ever find a woman who moved me quite as much as Priscilla.
That was pretty amazing.
Spock, hand me a tissue.
Thank you, guys. I'll renew that. Yeah, thank you so much.
He's a quiet genius over here in the corner.
He's the one. Thank you, guys. so much. Thank you, Michelle Speck.
Oh, thank you for having us. You're
beautiful.
Amazing.
You are Vic.
Thank you.
Manana.
Thank you. And you know what? We'd love to come back sometime.
Can you?
Obviously,
would
there's
you?
Obviously there's plenty to talk
oh,
about.
Oh my God, we could go 3 damn hours, right?
And all the people that wanted to call in, we want to talk
yes,
to them
maybe,
too.
Yeah, I know. Next time.
We're sorry, people.
And he had questions.
Oh, okay. How about this? Let's bring. You're starting your fundraiser campaign. Why don't we bring you back on right before the campaign?
Okay. Whatever works for you guys.
And then you guys go to my website, questionrealityradioshow.com, and look for them. And then we're going to take half of the show callers. So half will be callers, okay? All right. Thank you, Vic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Say goodbye to your fans.
Bye. We love you.
We love you. Thank you. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Oh, live long and prosper. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.